Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions. I'm your host, Todd Atkins, and I'm here with Eric Geiger.
What's happening?
And Kevin Peck.
Hello, how's everyone doing today?
Man, you sound...
Are you wearing a cardigan? Are you going to change into your slippers?
I'm actually wearing a free Lifeway jacket.
Oh. Hey, man, it's not free for everybody, bro. Quit getting...
Good. Okay, or I'll put it this way. I'm wearing my honorarium from Lifeway.
There you go.
Pay you in jackets.
It's all right. You can represent.
Todd pays you in jackets and gift cards.
Well, and the sad thing was, they only gave me half a jacket because that was what my talk was worth. But I love
it. Hey, your talk was definitely one of my favorites because we got to slip in quadrants. So
it wasn't one of my favorites because everybody liked his more than mine. So I wasn't. Well.
Todd liked me because I went 2 minutes under my time instead of lots.
We won't mention the cat who went over 9 minutes, Mancini.
we won't mention Will at all.
No, you shouldn't do that. That would be bad. All right, I do want to get into our third day of the book Designed to Lead. We have talked so far about the church as a leadership locus. We've talked about...
Can you say that again? Locus.
Locus.
You said locust.
I didn't say locust.
All right. Locus.
I said locus. All right. And then we talked about conviction, and today we're going to talk about culture. And there's so many things that have been said about culture, and I know that when we look at culture... There's all kinds of different opinions because it seems like every 10 to 15 years it becomes a new buzzword and everybody pays attention to cultivating culture, building culture, both in the business place and in the church. So I'm excited today to unpack what culture really is. So to you, Eric, the first question, what are the elements or ingredients of a church culture?
You know, Kevin and I worked on this book together, but this is a chapter in the book that I think Kevin really, really did an incredible job spearheading. And you'll see in the book.
Are you deflecting the question?
No, I'm going to answer it. I felt odd answering without giving cred to Kevin because he'd be like, "Dang it!" So
depends on how you answer. I might be like, "Woo!"
Yeah. I don't want that. So you're right. Culture is extremely important. The famous Peter Drucker statement is culture eats strategy for breakfast. The definition that we give. It's the shared beliefs and values that undergird everything a church does. So your culture isn't just what you have in writing, nor is it only the programs you offer. It's much more than that. It's deeper than that. It's the shared beliefs and values that drive the activity, that drive the actions, that drive the behavior. But you asked, what are the ingredients or the elements? And so there's three. There's the actual beliefs. That's the baseline, the foundation. Then there's the articulated beliefs, and it's got to begin with actual beliefs. So if you really believe that the church is called to develop and deploy leaders, that's an actual belief. Well, then you're going to articulate that belief. So there's an actual belief, then there's an articulated belief. And then the third element is the artifacts, and that's what people see, that's what they interact with. And so in terms of leadership development, it would be the programs or the leadership pipelines that you invite people to walk through, but it would also be the stories that you tell of leaders being matured in your congregation. It would be the heroes that you illustrate, that you say, hey, this is someone who's developed someone else. And so the artifact is often what people, when they think about culture, they often think about the artifact. They think about the stories. They think about, oh, this church has this really cool program. But you, if you only mess around with artifacts and tweak artifacts, you're really not getting to the foundation of culture. You got to go beneath artifacts to the articulated beliefs, and beneath the articulated beliefs to the actual beliefs. And so if you actually believe, if you really believe that every believer is a priest, if you really believe that the role of a pastor is not to do but to develop, if you really believe that, that will get fleshed out in what you articulate, and that will show up in your artifacts and your budgeting, your programming, even what you announce. And so those are the three elements. Peck, would you claim that? Would that be representative of how you wrote that section of the book, or do you not want to claim that?
You crushed it, Dr. Geiger.
Boom. Boom.
Touch them all. All right, so help me then break down that a little bit further, Dr. Peck, on the artifacts, because I know what you're talking about, and Eric did a fairly decent job of telling what some of those artifacts are. Unpack that a little bit more, if you would.
Yeah, artifacts are anything that's an outflow of our belief systems. I mean, that's exactly what it is. Whether it's our architecture. Or it's the artistic flavor, or it's particular programs, or whether it's the way we design processes, all of that is actually driven out of our beliefs. And so, for instance, some churches will spend $600 per square foot building a building. They don't do it just because the architect convinced them. They do it because they believe something about the building and its purpose, its design. They have some conviction about what the building represents, and then other people will take a very bland building, a very boxy building, and it actually says something about what they believe. And so, here in my city, we'll drive by one building and it'll be 60,000 square feet, and it's all sanctuary, no kids space. Well, what do they believe? That's not just a need. That's actually a belief about what needs to happen on when the church gathers. For right or for wrong, it's determining what they believe. That would be an artifact. But similarly, another artifact would be just the actual results you get from the organization. So let's say you have a sign up for interest in going to short-term mission trips. You say, hey, we're gonna have a short-term mission trip meeting. Anybody interested, come. And zero people coming is an artifact of the culture. It says something about the culture. It says something about what they value and what they believe. And it really doesn't matter at that moment just what you have written in your mission statement. What you're going to do in those moments, when you look at artifacts, you're going to actually see, or at least get some sign as to what people actually in their core believe, not just what you say you believe, but at the end of the day, like the stuff you can see, measure, taste, smell, look at, those are the kind of things that actually show you fundamentally at least some aspect of really what the core beliefs of people are.
All right. So Eric, is church culture an intentional decision or a byproduct of other decisions and circumstances?
It's definitely not just one decision. So it's going to be the byproduct of a myriad of decisions, which would be, hey, this is what we believe. This is how we talk about what we believe. Here's how we illustrate what we believe. At the same time, I do believe it is a commitment and decision to cultivate your culture. But it's not just one decision. Hey, we're going to care about culture. You actually then have to make a plethora of decisions beneath that to cultivate the culture well. So I'm not trying to take the easy way out, but it's really both. It's the byproduct of a bunch of decisions and commitments over a sustained period of time. But at the same time, you have to actually care about the culture and make decisions in light of the culture that you're attempting to create and then cultivate.
So every place has a culture, whether they realize it or not.
Everybody, every single organization, ministry, church has a culture, no doubt.
What are some ways that you can figure out what your culture is?
Listen to the stories, listen to what's celebrated, look to, so if you go to a place, you can tell, if you're new in a location or a ministry context, you can tell, okay, what's resourced, you know, where's resources placed. You can listen for what people pray about. What's the church collectively burdened for? You listen for the stories that are told of celebrations, like, hey, this happened, this happened. Because whatever you're celebrating, Plato said, whatever you're celebrating, you're cultivating. Mm. You look to the heroes, those who are held up as being the exemplary models of here's what we really want to see happen in this context. That's a way to get a sense of what a culture is.
Good deal. So, Kevin, what are some key characteristics of a healthy leadership development culture in the local church?
Yeah, I think for that, you know, we would just articulate the three. Eric and I have had a lot of conversation about this, but kind of three primary ones. Obviously, there'd be a lot of nuanced smaller ones, but I think the three primary ones you're going to want to look at is they would have a profound sense of shared identity. To have a healthy culture, they would have this identity that they would have to share was this actual sense of what their actual purpose of their of who they are is. So their identity as sons and daughters of God and ambassadors on Christ's behalf, it has to be a key part of who they are. The church itself has to believe itself to be a part of God's expanding kingdom of his sons and daughters. And when they share that identity, they begin to see themselves not just as like duty Christians. They don't begin to see themselves as just purely like recipients of the kingdom, but they begin to see themselves as owners of the kingdom, as participants in the kingdom. They see themselves as part of the family business because we're sons and daughters of the Father God. And then when they begin to have a shared sense of that ambassadorship, that we're not just sons and daughters, but we're part of our core identity is we're ambassadors, that we believe the scripture when it says that, you're a new creation in Christ. Behold, the old is gone and the new is come. And then skip two verses and it says, therefore, you're ambassadors on Christ's behalf, that our ambassadorship is connected to our sonship, as it were. And when we begin to have like a shared identity of that, we begin to say we not only receive the kingdom, we belong to the kingdom and we own the kingdom's purposes to expand. And then when you begin to do that, you're going to begin to kind of have not only just a shared identity, but it needs a shared mission. And part of that mission must be the full mission of God, not just a mission of a church to say be healthy, but to say God's mission is healthiness as expressed through our flourishing, and our flourishing being expressed as our reproductivity or our multiplication, our actually multiplying disciples and leaders and churches all over the world. When people begin to own that mission, and they see, okay, here's my identity, here's our identity, and now here's our mission. Our mission is part of seeing the name of Jesus spread to every single tribe, tongue, and nation on this planet by reproducing, multiplying, discipling new believers, new leaders, and new churches all over the world. Then finally and foremost, I think you can kind of articulate sitting on top of that is this third element of healthy culture that just says they have to see leadership development as an essential strategy to accomplishing their mission and expressing their identity.
Hmm. Boom.
That's good.
I don't think we need to ask any more questions. We're done now.
Mic drop.
Well, it's
I have to change it to three leadership questions.
Three leadership questions. It's now forever been changed. The title of the podcast.
It's three.
Let's call it tri-perspectival questions.
Because okay. That sounds so much more interesting.
Blogger. Well,
yeah, the blogosphere loves that term.
Okay, I am gonna ask a fourth question to you, Mr. Geiger. I'm sorry, Dr. Geiger. Mm. What are the marks of a church culture that does not develop leaders?
Well, for sure, there's going to be a separation between the pastors or the professional people and everybody else. And so the culture is going to view, hey, we hire pastors to do ministry. So there, man, we've grown, our church has grown. So let's hire another pastor, not to develop us, but to do ministry for us or on behalf of us or to us. You know, we're gonna pay people to do ministry. That's going to be a mark of a church culture that doesn't believe all of God's people, or they may, like, on the actual belief and even in the articulated belief, they may say, oh, yeah, we believe that all, you know, every member is a minister and that's what we're here for. But you can tell, if this isn't the artifact, if the job description of the pastor is just to do, then it's not really in the culture. So it's a culture that doesn't develop leaders because, hey, we hire people to do ministry, not to develop others for ministry. A second mark would be there's a consumer nature to the church. It's hey, we show up and we consume, and we're not here to contribute. And so, and then you have ministry leaders who figure out ways to have a larger consumption center or more people consuming, as opposed to a systematic approach to here's how we grab people where they are, disciple them, develop them, and deploy them. So just the two come to my mind, a church culture that doesn't develop leaders. You've got the hero ministry leaders, you know, you hire people mm-hmm. to do ministry, and you've got a consumer culture, not a development culture.
Kevin, is there anything you would add to that?
You know, I think just, I think that actually would be a statistic that follows those two would just be just looking at leadership attrition actually is really helpful. When I look at the book of Acts, I see two ways people get out of the church. Are you know, two primary ways a living person gets out of the church. I want to eliminate death as an option. That is one way to get out of the local church. But really, the two that people would be out of a church was they'd be disciplined out or sent out. They wouldn't just leave. And I think it's just that's why attrition is such an important thing to me. I don't count it as attrition when someone you know, is called by our church to go and take a next step of leadership. That's to be celebrated. But when people make lateral moves or just drop out, and you just get the sense, and you're have to internally judge which reason is which. But I just think that at the end of the day, there's far too many people who are just looking for a new job, just changing churches. And I think that ties into the consumer mentality that Eric was talking about. People shouldn't just change. They shouldn't just leave. They should be sent, or in worst case scenario, they should be disciplined out. But I think when we don't even care or at least measure why people are leaving and just making it okay that, hey, some people just want to bounce, I think we rob ourselves from the opportunity to take a deeper look and figure out whether or not there's actually a leadership ceiling that people are feeling. And when they feel that, you know, sometimes they make a move just so that they can grow.
Are there any processes or regular auditing, any cadence of accountability that you do to measure that attrition?
Yeah, for us, I mean, a big piece of it is when we do exit interviewing for people. Let me say this first. First of all, we actually measure sending. So we have platforms for no matter where you're at in leadership, whether that's lay minister or you're on staff or you're an elder, we have regular opportunities for people to raise their hand and say, I want to be sent. And we found that a lot of people actually invent disgruntledness because they need to like give themselves permission to leave, and they don't feel your permission to follow a vision that God's given them. So they, instead of just kind of raising their hand going, hey, can I be sent? They'll just kind of convince themselves that they have to leave. And we actually just give them permission to leave. And so on a regular cadence, two times a year for international church planting, three times a year for actually doing church planting, either as like a pastor or by as a layperson. We're trying to integrate those rhythms in this year so that people can just raise their hand and go, I think God's calling me to multiply as a leader. And just giving them opportunity to do that. The second is on the exit interview. When someone leaves and isn't sent, we want to dig and figure out, okay, is this, this may be a providence of God thing where like, hey, God's moving me to Chicago because I got a God chain. I got a calling from God. Then we actually want to articulate to them, we'd like to send you. How much time do we have between here and there in order to prepare you to be the very best leader on mission you can be when you get to Chicago. Other times we'll hear people say, they kind of hem and haw, and as we push on it, ultimately we found that they just left because they didn't feel developed. That's when we put a big asterisk on it, and we have good dialogue across departments about why did this happen, and is this a systemic failure on our part to develop leaders?
That's so good. I mean, I think there's things like that that we can put in place that keep things that help us really understand what's going on, number one. And number two, taking a lot of the subjectivity and conjecture out of it. It's difficult to measure, yes, but, you know, if you do a little extra work, you know, you don't have to depend on a couple of conversations and three emails and say that this is a major issue or this is not a major issue. So I think that is something that's really helpful for our church leaders to hear. Eric, changing culture is both difficult and dangerous. So what are some key starting points to do so effectively in your church?
It is so difficult to change culture. I remember when I was a part of a cultural transformation in a local church that I served before coming here, a wise pastor saying to me, "Oh, you can do it, but it's like changing the DNA of a person." I mean, you can do it. I mean, you can, you know, wire a person up and do a transfusion, but it's hard. I mean, it's hard. And I'd say, you know, a church is a body. So it's much easier to start with a culture and keep that culture. It's very, very difficult to change a culture. So I think what you want to realize is, hey, there's some affirmable things in the culture I'm in now. And so not to go in as the guy who's, I'm going to change everything about this place. You probably went to the wrong place. You want to look at what's already there that's affirmable and highlight those things and lift those things up and feed those things and then starve the bad values in the culture. So instead of saying, hey, I'm gonna blank page this and create something brand new, actually the more helpful and the more redemptive and the more probably safer, but definitely more godly approach is to say, okay, here's the things in the culture that are healthy, and I'm gonna reinforce these and emphasize these, and I may add a couple of values on top of these or alongside these, but I'm not in my head throwing the whole thing out and starting over.
Yeah, I remember us having a conversation about this before on a previous podcast, and I think one of the things that you said was even if you have to go back into the history of the church and look for something.
There were some godly people who were part of launching it. There were some godly people who, alongside the way, and you find those stories and you find values that are beneath the surface and you celebrate those. Every single culture, even healthy cultures, have values that aren't healthy, and you just don't want to celebrate those. You don't want to reinforce those, but you do want to celebrate and reinforce the values that are, and over time, hopefully, those values will swallow up the negative ones, the bad ones.
Okay, so this already has been pretty practical, but I want to give both of you an opportunity to say any books that are helpful on culture creation, curation, or leading change.
The book Leading Change by John Cotter is probably, I think it's pretty well known as the landmark book on cultural transformation. Here's the interesting thing. We actually reference it in Design to Lead. He says culture is the last thing that's changed, and everybody wants to start with it as the first thing that's changed. It goes back to your question, is it one decision or a plethora of decisions? It's the last thing that's transitioned is culture. And so you want to know where you're going and make decisions that help get you there. But it's a very, very difficult thing to transition. But his book's very helpful. It's actually really interesting to read alongside the book of Nehemiah, because you'll see, by the way, Nehemiah didn't need the book. You know, Nehemiah was came out long before Cotter's Leading Change. But it is interesting to see that the things Cotter suggests, Nehemiah did without having to read Cotter's book.
Kevin, what do you got?
For me, I kind of go into the, you know, just go to the nerd well a little bit. But kind of on the opposite side of practical, I think there would be a good theoretical factor.
He's about to quote Shine, Edward Shine.
No, that's mine.
You knew it was coming.
I knew. This is, listen, if you have to have a 31 or higher on your ACT to be able to understand this guy's book.
No, there's gold in there.
Yeah, I agree, but you got to be a really smart cat to get it.
He's got his For Dummies version called the Organizational Cultural Survival Manual.
Yeah, but who wants to carry that one around? I can't read the whole thing.
No, you want the big old – I have a big old orange textbook. One's orange and one's green. I've got two of his old textbooks. Keep going. So, sorry, I interrupted.
Edgar Schein, he's from MIT Sloan School of Management. He wrote kind of what I think is kind of the cornerstone text on – organizational culture specifically, and it's called Understanding Organizational Culture. So it's I think it's the book to grab if you want to take more than a colloquial look at what this thing called organizational culture is, to kind of move past the surface level understanding of this concept and actually take a look at what this discipline really looks like from a scientific and sociological view.
Absolutely. We always want to go back to the sources as pastors, right? I'm sorry. I did that for my theology people. But that is, if you're looking at culture, man, that is one of the godfathers of culture for sure. Well, I think that does it for this episode on culture. Next, we're going to be talking about constructs. And that probably... sounds like, the least exciting thing, but at the end of the day, that is really the make or break pieces in developing a leadership pipeline, in developing leaders in your church. So really excited to talk about that tomorrow.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.